Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to our deep dive today. We're looking at someone you definitely know, or at least you think you know, George Washington.
That's right. The face on the money, the first president, kind of this marble statue figure in American history.
Exactly. But today we're going beneath that statue. We're diving into Ron Chernow's Pulitzer Prize-winning biography, Washington, A Life.
And Chernow, he's brilliant at this. He takes these huge historical figures and makes them, well, human again. He digs into the psychology, the struggles, not just the timeline.
So our goal here is to peel back those layers of myth. We want to find the real Washington, ambitious, flawed, passionate.
And understand how his very personal journey, his self-creation, really shaped the entire country. Chernow argues his greatness wasn't destiny, it was built painstakingly.
Right. A product of discipline, ambition, duty, all wrestling inside him.
So let's get into that journey. Where does Chernow begin? It's not exactly grand beginnings, is it?
No, not really. Virginia planter class, sure, but kind of modest within that world. And his father died when he was young, only 11.
Yeah, and that loss, Chernow shows, had a huge impact. Less formal education than his older brothers, which seemed to fuel this lifelong insecurity, actually.
Interesting. So that insecurity drove him.
You could say that. It lit a fire. He was determined to rise through, well, sheer effort. Self-education, ambition for land, for wealth, for military honor. You see it early on.
Like his work as a surveyor out in the wilderness.
Exactly. For years, learning the frontier, building physical toughness, independence. It wasn't just about maps. It was about understanding the potential, the challenges of the West.
And he wasn't shy about taking risks, even huge ones. Didn't he sort of accidentally start a war?
He kind of did. His first big military mission out in the Ohio Valley. Well, it didn't go well at all. It helped spark the French and Indian War.
Wow. So brave, but maybe a bit rash.
In the beginning, yes. Chernow shows him as audacious, brave, but also impetuous. He learned hard lessons, like his defeat at Fort Necessity. But fighting alongside the British, that was crucial too. He felt slighted, looked down upon as a colonial officer. That built this resentment, this feeling of being, well, American, not just a second-rate Briton.
So those early years were a real furnace, forging his leadership, but also his identity.
Absolutely. Toughness, ambition, and that simmering sense of American identity all got started there.
Okay, so after that turbulent start in the military, he shifts gears. He marries Martha Custis, a wealthy widow.
Right, 1759. And that marriage instantly catapulted him into the absolute top tier of Virginia society. Huge land holdings, wealth.
Yeah.
He became one of the richest men around.
And he throws himself into managing Mount Vernon. Meticulous, demanding businessman.
Yes, but here's where Chernow really dives deep, and it's uncomfortable, but crucial. Washington's relationship with slavery.
Right. He doesn't gloss over it.
No, Chernow confronts it directly. The buying, the selling, the harsh discipline required to run Mount Vernon on enslaved labor. It's all there.
But he also tracks a change, right? A growing unease.
Exactly. It wasn't sudden, but Chernow meticulously traces the start of Washington's moral qualms. As the ideas of liberty and natural rights started swirling before the Revolution,
the contradiction became harder to ignore.
Precisely. The injustice of owning people clashed more and more with his conscience. He started expressing private doubts, trying not to break up families, looking for ways out of the system, even if he didn't find easy answers then.
So a real moral evolution starting there, even amidst the life of a wealthy planter.
A deeply important part of his story. He was wrestling with it.
Then, of course, comes the revolution, the call to lead the Continental Army. We know how it ends, but it was rough going.
Oh, incredibly rough, especially early on. He faced humiliating defeats. Losing New York City in 76 was a disaster, nearly lost the whole army.
So he wasn't some military genius right out of the gate.
No, Chernow argues his genius wasn't necessarily battlefield tactics. He learned, often the hard way, from his mistakes. He shifted strategy, moved away from trying to beat the British head on, which wasn't working. Instead, it became about survival, attrition, keeping the army alive to fight another day. Think long game.
So more a grand strategist, a leader, than a tactician.
Exactly. An incredible logistician. Keeping that poorly equipped army going was a miracle in itself. And his leadership, just his presence, was vital.
And Chernow really brings home the human cost, doesn't he, at those winters?
Oh, absolutely. Valley Forge, Morristown. Chernow describes hellish conditions, starvation, disease, freezing cold, lack of basic supplies.
Unimaginable.
But Washington was there, sharing their suffering, refusing to give up. That sheer force of will, that presence, held the army together when it could have just dissolved.
He was the cause, in a way.
He embodied it.
Mm-hmm.
And Chernow also highlights his use of spies, intelligence gathering, which was crucial. Plus, dealing with Congress. That was a constant battle, too.
Yeah. Politicians meddling, not enough support. Some things don't change.
Definitely a source of immense frustration for him.
But then comes perhaps his most defining moment. And it wasn't a battle victory.
No, you're right. It was after the victory. 1783, the war is over. Everyone expects the victorious general to, well, take over.
Like Caesar or Cromwell. History suggested he'd seize power.
And he could have. He had the army's loyalty. Immense popularity. But instead, he goes to Congress in Annapolis, gives up his command, and goes home to Mount Vernon.
Just incredible.
It stunned the world. A profound act of Republican virtue. It established civilian control over the military, the peaceful transfer of power, mm-hmm. foundational for the American experiment.
So he tries retirement again, back to the farm. Does it stick this time?
He genuinely wanted it to. But the country he'd fought for, it was struggling. The Articles of Confederation were too weak. The government couldn't tax, couldn't enforce laws effectively.
And events like Shay's Rebellion, farmers rising up, that must have worried him deeply.
It terrified him. He saw the potential for collapse. That conviction pushed him back into public life.
First, the Constitutional Convention in 87.
Right. He didn't say much, apparently. But just having him preside over it gave the whole thing immense legitimacy. His presence mattered.
And then, inevitably, the presidency, unanimously elected.
Twice. But Chernow emphasizes his real reluctance. He compared heading to the inauguration to a culprit who was going to the place of his execution. He felt the enormous weight.
Because there was no blueprint. He was inventing the presidency as he went.
Totally untrodden ground, as he put it. Every decision set a precedent. Creating the cabinet, how the president interacts with Congress, establishing etiquette, asserting federal power, like during the Whiskey Rebellion.
Right, when farmers resisted a federal tax.
He had to show the new government could enforce its laws. But the real drama, inside his own cabinet.
Hamilton versus Jefferson.
The clash of titans. Hamilton pushing for a strong federal government, national bank, commerce. Jefferson championing states' rights. Farmers, a more limited government.
And Washington had to navigate that.
He tried to stay above it, be a unifier. But ultimately, Chernow shows he sided more with Hamilton's vision for a stable, financially sound nation.
Which didn't make him popular with everyone. The press started getting really partisan.
Viciously partisan. And it wounded Washington. He had thin skin, despite the stoic image. Those attacks really got to him.
So after two terms, he steps down again, setting another huge precedent. What about those final years back at Mount Vernon? You mentioned his evolving views on slavery. Did that come to a head?
It did. Chernow focuses heavily on this as Washington's final conclusive confrontation with the issue that had troubled him for decades.
What did he do?
Privately, he'd expressed his hatred for the institution. He worked on plans to somehow untangle his estate from it, though it was incredibly complex financially and legally. But his will, that was his final statement.
What did the will say?
It ordered that all the enslaved people he personally owned, about 123 individuals, were to be freed upon Martha's death. Not immediately, but upon her passing. And crucially, he provided for the elderly and sick and for the education and training of the younger ones.
That's pretty radical for a Virginia planter of his status at that time.
Monumental. Unprecedented, really.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't perfect by our standards today. It didn't free the people Martha brought to the marriage, the dower slaves. But it was a powerful public condemnation of the institution from the nation's founder.
A final act of moral evolution. Trying to align his actions with the nation's ideals.
Exactly. A complex legacy, but that final act speaks volumes about his journey.
Okay, so pulling all this together, what are the big human lessons we can take from Washington's life as seen through Chernow's eyes for us today?
Well, first, I think, is that lifelong struggle for self-mastery. That famous stoicism. It wasn't natural. Chernow reveals a fiery, passionate man underneath.
The composure was built, not born.
Precisely. Decades of effort. It's a huge lesson in emotional intelligence, self-control under pressure. You don't have to be stoic naturally. You can become composed through discipline. Vital for any kind of leadership.
And related to that, his ambition. It was huge, but he managed to temper it.
Yes, that's the second point. Ambition tempered by Republican virtue. He desperately wanted distinction, but he understood that in their new system, power had to be treated as a public trust, a burden.
Giving it up after the war, after two terms.
That's the key. It teaches so much about ethical leadership, knowing when to step aside for the good of the whole, fighting that founder syndrome we still see today.
And what about his capacity to change, especially on slavery?
That's the third lesson. His capacity for growth and moral evolution. His journey on slavery shows it's possible to evolve, even on deeply ingrained beliefs tied to your whole way of life. He was a product of his time, yes, but not completely trapped by it.
It's a model for reevaluating our own biases, isn't it?
Absolutely. Constantly striving to align what we do with what we say we believe.
And one more, maybe less obvious one. You mentioned him being quiet sometimes.
Ah, yes. The power of strategic silence and observation. At the Constitutional Convention, in cabinet debates, he often listened more than he spoke. Let everyone else have their say first.
So he could get the full picture.
Exactly. Understand all angles before deciding. It's about thoughtful leadership, not just being the loudest voice. A really underrated skill.
So wrapping up the main discussion, Chernow gives us a Washington who isn't a marble statue, but deeply human.
Flawed, complex, driven. His achievements weren't effortless. They came from immense discipline, internal struggle. He made himself great.
He rescued him from the myth, really. It made him more relatable, maybe even more inspiring because of the struggle.
I think so. The legacy isn't just battles or policies. It's the character he built.
Yeah.
And that core principle, power, ultimately rests with the people, not the person.
Okay, let's distill this into three final takeaways for everyone listening. What's the emotional heart of Washington's story?
For me, the emotional insight is the profound burden of leadership coupled with relentless self-discipline. Imagine the internal pressure, the constant need to suppress his fiery nature, to project calm and control for the sake of the cause, for the sake of the nation. It's a story of immense personal sacrifice for public duty.
Right, the weight he carried. Okay, intellectually, what's the key idea to grasp?
The intellectual insight has to be that the American presidency and the norms of American power were not inevitable. They were consciously invented, largely by Washington's precedents. His deliberate choices, relinquishing power, establishing cabinet government, asserting federal authority carefully. These weren't just policies, they were foundational acts that shaped the very structure of American governance.
He was building the ship while sailing it. And finally, a universal lesson. Something practical for anyone.
I think the most universal insight is the power of lifelong learning and adaptation. Washington had limited formal education, faced constant setbacks, yet he continually learned from mistakes, from observation, from reading. His capacity to evolve, whether in military strategy or moral understanding, shows that growth is possible at any stage if you possess humility and determination.
So think about this. As you look at leaders today, in any field, how many truly wrestle with their own flaws like Washington did? How many consciously choose to put the greater good ahead of personal ambition or ego? What does his journey tell us about the kind of character real leadership demands, even now? A lot to think about there. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.